But joining me in the studio today in his place is geology professor emeritus Lori Dangler. We had a couple of shakers today, actually a few, and let's talk about that. Dr. Dangler, welcome.
Well, a little fanfare, a little shake, rattle, and roll.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, so I don't know how many of you listening started out the day sort of similar to me. There I was lying in bed on the second floor of a wood frame house and thinking about all the long overdue things I needed to tackle. When things started to sway, and I didn't think it was my husband rolling over, especially when he said, that's an earthquake. And I said,
not again.
Drat. And that means I had to get up, go downstairs, and start figuring out the story behind it. So if you're interested in getting my take on earthquakes when they happen, the best place to look is at the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group's Facebook page.
Absolutely.
That's where, you know, that's kind of my go-to place to post things. So if you're a Facebook user, even if you aren't, you can just search for the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group. And you can see the information that we post. So, you know, first finding out where it was, finding out how big it is, and fortunately I have a couple of direct feeds from USGS that allows me to actually get information without worrying about how loaded a website is. So the first information was it looked like it was on the Mendocino Fault. It looked like it was on the order of 100 miles offshore of Cape Mendocino. And the first magnitude was 6.8.
Pretty significant.
Which surprised me because from what I had experienced, I thought, maybe a 5 or something. But I'm sure I didn't feel the beginning of it, and I didn't count how long the shaking lasts. But that's often typical of our far offshore earthquakes.
Okay.
In that, because of the distance, that filters the frequency. So I have talked to some people that were in Ferndale who said they felt it pretty sharply, but the thick sediments in the Eel River Valley tend to amplify shaking, whereas where I live, we don't tend to get that in McKinleyville. So that sort of slow shaking is real typical of an offshore earthquake.
Okay. You mentioned you began counting, or you didn't begin counting. Explain the count once you feel a jolt.
Yeah, usually I try to get into the habit of counting, because counting does two really important things. Probably the most important, counting puts your mind on something other than your sort of innate, instinctive response to the shaking, which releases adrenaline, which can make you nervous and all of those things. Counting really counteracts that and allows you to kind of retake control, remembering to breathe, useful things.
Changing
like
your
that.
Focus.
Right.
Okay.
So counting is really useful just in terms of getting your head in the right place. It's also a great thing to do as an exercise with kids. If you have kids in your family, you know, practice an earthquake drill periodically and say, okay, today, Debbie, it's your turn. Sometime in the day, you get to call earthquake, and then we will all, wherever we are, do what we're supposed to do, and we're going to count it. And that makes it a really nice positive thing for children rather than something frightening. And especially if you personally tend to be frightened by it, boy, kids are going to pick up on that really, really fast.
Absolutely. The 94 quake in Los Angeles, my son was 4, and he was traumatized for probably a year after that.
Yeah, and a lot of that traumatization is because seeing mom or dad frightened, that's scary. The earthquake may not be scary at all to
Absolutely.
A 4-year-old, but seeing the boy, this is something that, you know, scares this important person in my life.
Right.
The second reason that counting is useful is that it actually allows you to be a kind of a seismologist. It allows you to get a handle on how large the magnitude of that earthquake was. So basically, the size of an earthquake depends on how large a rupture happens. Okay. And the whole time the rupture happens, it's producing the seismic waves. So you can have a strong earthquake that's a magnitude 5, mid-5s. We had one of those way back in 1996. Mm-hmm. Actually did damage in Eureka. A lot more damage. Today's earthquake doesn't appear to have done any damage. But that earthquake, I counted, and it lasted 12 seconds. And I knew immediately this is not the kind of earthquake that's going to produce a tsunami. And I knew immediately that this was an earthquake that was probably pretty close because it was so sharp, but it probably wasn't much bigger than a 5 to a 5.5. Similarly, back in 1992, I counted the earthquake almost 25 years ago this April, and I counted and I counted, and when I got to 75, I realized, okay, this is probably something that is approaching a magnitude 7. It ended up being a 7.2. Oh. And had I been near the coast, this would very clearly have been a big siren going off in my head telling me I need to evacuate because this, I need to go to high ground if I'm in a tsunami zone, because this is an earthquake that is large enough to produce a tsunami. It did produce a tsunami, but it was small.
Okay.
And it arrived at low tide, so we didn't have any tsunami damages, but still. So counting is really useful in terms of giving you a tool to indicate, is this something that I can basically say, okay, typical moderate earthquake, I don't need to worry if there was a tsunami. Now, there is another very useful tool you can have, and that is you can actually get text messages from the Tsunami Warning Center sent directly to you. Oh. So, for example, today's earthquake, by the time I got downstairs where my cell phone was plugged in, because I've decided I don't like it having it next to my bed anymore, there was already a message from the National Tsunami Warning Center that said, an earthquake's occurred, magnitude 6.8, no tsunami expected. Okay. And they had that determination 4 minutes after the earthquake.
That's amazing.
4 minutes.
Wow.
So literally by the time the shaking's kind of over, you've kind of gotten yourself pulled together, and you're thinking maybe I need to evacuate, that information is there. Now, we've posted that information on the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group's Facebook page, but I will give it to you or Katie so that you can post it on the KHSU webpage.
Great.
Because I think that would be, it's really easy, and you can get messages from just the National Tsunami Warning Center, or you can get it from the Pacific Warning Center if you want to get all the messages. So what we know at this point about that earthquake, the one this morning, is that it was a pretty ordinary earthquake in the sense of it's the kind of earthquake we expect to have around here. It happened on the Mendocino Fault. That's in 1994, we had a magnitude 7 earthquake on that fault that was pretty close to where today's earthquake was. Those earthquakes, although they can be pretty big, they're far enough offshore that they don't tend to do damage, and they don't produce tsunamis.
Okay.
Because the fault movement is side to side, like cars moving on a freeway. The fault movement is not up and down. It doesn't push the seafloor, raise it, or lower it.
Okay.
You've got to raise the water or lower the water in order to get a tsunami going.
So it's equivalent to slamming a book in a bathtub full of water.
Long as it's horizontal.
If I take a book... The water has to go somewhere, and that's
right.
What causes
if
the
if I had a book in the bathtub and I raise the book up suddenly, I'm going to get a bulge of water.
Okay.
That's the tsunami.
Okay.
But if I just slide the book horizontally on the bottom of the bathtub, which is probably only worth doing if you don't like that book very much.
I was going to say that.
It's not going to raise the water up and down.
Okay.
So I thought that was all the seismic excitement we were going to have today.
And then we had
but
two aftershocks.
Mother Nature thought otherwise. And so a little after 10:30 this morning, I get, again, a bulletin directly on my phone from the National Tsunami Warning Center. That's often the very first notification. And this program I have on my computer was beeping, and I thought, oh, it's probably magnitude 4 somewhere, because any time a magnitude 4 anywhere in the world happens, I get my computer flashing. We'll see if it does it during this interview.
Let's hope not.
But I looked, and it was a magnitude 8 earthquake. It was first 7.9, and then it was 8, and then it ended up going to a 7.7, and finally it looks like it settled on a 7.8.
And that was in the Solomon Islands.
And that was on the other side of the Pacific Ocean in the Solomon Islands. Now, this is an area that has magnitude 7 and 8 earthquakes relatively frequently. If I were to bet where in the world we're likely to have a large earthquake in the next week, my number one bet would be in the southwestern Pacific.
Because Indonesia.
Year in, year out, that's where we tend to get a lot of earthquakes on that part of the Pacific Ring of Fire. So that earthquake was of concern to us because of the potential of producing a tsunami. There was an initial tsunami watch issued for Hawaii, and there was a tsunami threat message issued to countries in the Southwest Pacific. About an hour after the earthquake, both tsunami warning centers said no tsunami threat to any U.S. territory.
That's a blessing.
Yeah.
And it's also a blessing that Solomon Islands and surrounding areas, that's sparsely populated.
About 500,000 people live in the Solomon Islands.
I'm thinking,
sparsely populated.
I'm thinking of a different area, perhaps. There are a couple of areas in the South Pacific where they're sparsely.
But actually, it's surprising what the population is on a lot of those islands.
Okay.
So we can actually provide you with some tools if you want to know how to better prepare yourself and your family and your workplace.
Yes.
We have copies of our earthquake magazine, Living on Shaky Ground, How to Survive Earthquakes and Tsunamis in Northern California, available in both English and Spanish for free.
Okay, well, we have about one minute left. Where can we find those?
You can actually find them if you're on campus. They're posted in the geology department. They're also right outside the police office in the Student Business Services building.
Okay.
But if you leave a message, 707-826-6019, and we can get that posted on the KHSU website page two. You can leave a message and request as many copies as you like, and we'd be glad to deliver them to you. The other, put them in everybody's stockings for Christmas. The other little aid I want to suggest is the story we wrote about the tsunami boat from Japan, The Extraordinary Voyage of Kamo Mei. And this is a children's book that really introduces earthquakes and tsunamis in a sweet, heartwarming way that I hope will give you a window into talking to your children about preparing. And there's a section in the back. And you can get this basically at any North Coast bookstore. You can certainly get it online as well.
Okay, so we will add a link to that on our KHSU webpage as well. And again, thank you, Dr. Lori Dangler, for all that you do in our community and around. Thank you for keeping us informed and reminding us to stay safe. USGS.gov. That's the place to go.
USGS.gov is certainly the place where you can get reports on recent earthquakes, and hopefully we'll get some good links posted on the KHSU webpage.
We will at the culmination of this program today. It will be posted. Thank you so much, and what is the cry? Stop, drop, and cover? Or just be still?
Drop, cover, and hold, but basically freeze.
Okay.
Just don't move while the ground is shaking. Okay. That's not a good idea.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Dengler. Coming up next, Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. Stay tuned.